Side two.
His PIPA secretary knew where he was going. His PIPA chauffeur knew where he wanted to go. Reich arrived in his apartment and was met by his PIPA house supervisor, who at once announced early luncheon and dialed the meal to Reich's unspoken demands. Feeling slightly less violent, Reich stalked into his study and turned to his safe, a shimmer of light in the corner. It was simply a honeycomb paper rack, turned out of temporal phase with a single cycle beat. Each second, when the safe phase and the temporal phase coincided, the rack pulsed with a brilliant glow. The safe could only be opened by the paw pattern of Reich's left index finger, which was irreproducible. Reich placed the tip of his finger in the centre of the glow. It faded, and the honeycomb rack appeared. Holding his finger in place, he reached up and took down a small black notebook and a large red envelope. He moved his index finger, and the safe pulsed out of phase again. Reich flipped through the pages of the notebook. Abduction, anarchists, arsonists, bribery proven, bribery potential. Under potential, he found the names of 57 prominent people. One of them was Augustus Tate, Esper medical doctor one. He nodded with satisfaction. He tore open the red envelope and examined its contents. It contained 5 sheets of closely written pages in a handwriting that was centuries old. It was a message from the founder of Monarch Utilities and the Reich clan. 4 of the 5 pages were lettered Plan A, Plan B, Plan C, Plan D. The 5th was headed Introduction. Reich read the ancient spidery cursive slowly. To all those who come after me, the test of intellect is the refusal to belabor the obvious. If you have opened this letter, we understand one another. I have prepared 4 general murder plans which may help you. I bequeath them to you as part of your Reich inheritance. They are outlines. The details must be filled in by yourself as your time, your environment, and necessity require. Caution. The essence of murder never changes. In every era, it remains the conflict of the killer against society, with the victim as the prize. The ABC of conflict with society remains constant. Be audacious, be brave, be confident, and you will not fail. Against these assets, society can have no defense. Jeffrey Reich. Reich leafed through the plan slowly, filled with admiration for the first of his line, who had had the forethought to prepare for every possible emergency. The plans were outdated, but they kindled imagination. The ideas began forming and crystallizing to be considered, discarded, and instantly replaced. One phrase caught his attention. If you believe yourself a natural killer, avoid planning too carefully. Leave most to your instinct. Intellect may fail you, but the killer instinct is invincible.
The killer instinct, Reich breathed. By God, I've got that.
The phone chimed once, and then the automatic switched on. There was a quick chatter, and tape began to stutter out of the recorder. Reich strode to the desk and examined it. The message was short and deadly. Code to Reich. Reply. WWHG. WWHG.
Offer refused. 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 I knew it, Reich shouted. All right, to Courtney. If you won't let it be murder, then I'll make it murder.
Chapter 2. Augustus Tate, EMD 1, received 1,000 credits per hour of analysis. Not a high fee, considering that a patient rarely required more than an hour of the doctor's devastating time. But it placed his income at 8,000 credits a day, or well over 2 million credits a year. Few people knew what proportion of that income was paid into the Esper Guild for the education of other telepaths and the furthering of the Guild's eugenic plan to bring extrasensory perception to everyone in the world. Augustus Tate knew, and the 95% he paid was a sore point with him. Consequently, he belonged to the League of Esper Patriots, an extreme right-wing political group within the Guild, dedicated to the preservation of the autocracy and incomes of the upper-grade Espers. It was this membership that placed him in Ben Reich's bribery potential category. Reich marched into Tate's exquisite consulting room, glanced once at Tate's tiny frame, a figure slightly out of proportion but carefully realigned by tailors. Reich sat down and grunted, "Beep me quick." He glared in concentration at Tate, while the elegant little peeper examined him with a glittering eye and spoke in quick bursts. "You're Ben Reich of Monarch, 10 billion credit firm. Think I should know you. I do. You're involved in a death struggle with the de Courtney cartel, right? You're savagely hostile towards de Courtney, right? Offered merger this morning. Coded message YYJITTEDRRCBUUFEAALKQQBA. Offer refused, right? In desperation, you have resolved to..." Tate broke off abruptly.
"Go ahead," Reich said.
"To murder Craig de Courtney. As the first step in taking over his cartel, you want my help..."
"Mr. Reich, this is ridiculous. If you keep on thinking this, I'll have to commit you. You know the law." "Clever up, Tate. You're going to help me break the law."
"No, Mr. Reich, I'm in no position to help you."
"You say that, a first-class Esper, and I'm supposed to believe it? I suppose to believe you're incapable of outwitting any man, any group, the whole world?"
Tate smiled.
"Sugar for the fly," he said. "A characteristic device of peep me," Reich interrupted. "It'll save time. Read what's in my mind. Your gift, my resources, an unbeatable combination. My God. It's lucky for the world I'm willing to stop at one murder. Together we could rape the universe."
"No," Tate said with decision. "This won't do. I'll have to commit you, Mr. Reich."
"Wait, wait. Want to find out what I'm offering you? Read me deeper. How much am I willing to pay? What's my top limit?"
Tate closed his eyes. His mannequin face tightened painfully. Then his eyes opened in surprise.
"You can't be serious," he exclaimed. "I am," Reich grunted. "And what's more, you know it's an offer in good faith, don't you?"
Tate nodded slowly.
"And you're aware that Monarch plus de Courtney can make the offer good?"
"I almost believe you."
"You can believe me. I've been financing your League of Esper Patriots for 5 years. If you've peeped me deep enough, you know why. I hate the damned Esper Guild as much as you do. Guild ethics are bad for business, lousy for making money. Your League is the organization that can break the Esper Guild someday."
"I've got all that," Tate said sharply.
"With Monarch and de Courtney in my pocket, I can do better than help your faction break the Guild. I can make you president of a new Esper Guild for life. That's an unconditional guarantee. You can't do it alone, but you can do it with me."
Tate closed his eyes and murmured, "There hasn't been a successful premeditated murder in 79 years. Espers make it impossible to conceal intent before murder. Or if Espers have been evaded before the murder, they make it impossible to conceal the guilt afterwards."
"Esper evidence isn't admitted in court."
"True, but once an Esper discovers guilt, He can always uncover objective evidence to support his peeping. Lincoln Powell, the prefect of the police psychotic division, is deadly. Tate opened his eyes. Do you want to forget this conversation?
No, Reich growled. Look it over at me first. Why have murders failed? Because mind readers patrol the world. What can stop a mind reader? Another one. But no killer ever had the sense to hire a good peeper to run interference for him. Or if he had the sense, he couldn't make the deal. I've made that deal.
Have you?
I'm going to fight a war, Reich continued. I'm going to fight one sharp skirmish with society. Let's look at it as a problem in strategy and tactics. My problem's simply the problem of any army. Audacity, bravery, and confidence aren't enough. An army needs intelligence. A war is won with intelligence. I need you for my G2.
Agreed.
I'll do the fighting. You provide the intelligence. I'll have to know where de Courtney will be, where I can strike, when I can strike. I'll take care of the killing myself, but you'll have to tell me when and where the opportunity will be.
Understood.
I'll have to invade first. Cut through the defensive network surrounding de Courtney. That means reconnaissance from you. You'll have to check the normals, spot the peepers, warn me and block their mind reading if I can't avoid them. I'll have to retreat after the killing through another network of normals and peepers. You'll have to help me fight a rearguard action. You'll have to remain on the scene after the murder. You'll find out whom the police suspect and why. If I know suspicion is directed against myself, I can divert it. If I know it's directed against someone else, I can clinch it. I can fight this war and win this war with your intelligence. Is that the truth? Peep me.
After a long pause, Tate said, "It's the truth. We can do it."
"Will you do it?"
Tate hesitated, then nodded with finality. "Yes, I'll do it." Reich took a deep breath.
"Right. Now, here's the course I'm plotting. I think I can set up the killing with an old game called Sardine. It'll give me the opportunity to get it to Courtney, and I figured out a trick to kill him. I know how to fire an antique explosive gun without bullets."
"Wait," Tate interrupted sharply. "How are you going to keep all this intent concealed from stray peepers? I can only screen you when I'm with you. I won't be with you all the time."
"I can work up a temporary mind block. There's a songwriter down on Melody Lane I can swindle into helping me."
"It may work," Tate said after a moment's peeping. "But one thing occurs to me. Suppose de Courtney is protected. Do you expect to shoot it out with his bodyguards?"
"No. I'm hoping it won't be necessary. A physiologist named Jordan has just developed visual knockout drops for Monarch. We intended using it for strike riots. I'll use it on de Courtney's guards."
"I see.
You'll be working with me all along, doing reconnaissance and intelligence. But I need one piece of information first. When de Courtney comes to town, he's usually the guest of Maria Beaumont."
"The gilt corpse?"
"The same. I want you to find out if de Courtney's intends staying with her this trip. Everything depends on that."
"Easy enough. I can locate de Courtney's destination and plans for you. There should be a social gathering tonight at Lincoln Powell's house. De Courtney's physician will probably be there. He's on Terra for a week's visit. I'll start the reconnaissance through him."
"And you're not afraid of Powell?"
Tate smiled contemptuously. "If I were, Mr. Reich, would I trust myself in this bargain with you? Make no mistake, I'm no Jerry Church."
"Church?"
"Yes, don't act surprised. Church the second. He was kicked out of the guild 10 years ago for that little junket of his with you."
"Damn you. Got that from my mind, eh?"
"Your mind, and history. Well, it won't repeat itself this time. You're tougher and smarter than Church. Need anything special for Powell's party? Women, clothes, jewels, money? Just call on Monarch. Nothing, but thank you very much. Criminal but generous, that's me. Reich smiled as he arose to go. He did not offer to shake hands. Mr. Reich, Tate called suddenly. Reich turned at the door. The screaming will continue. The man with no face is not a symbol of murder.
What? Oh, Christ, the nightmares. Still, you goddamn peeper. How did you get that? How did you...
Don't be a fool. Do you think you can play games with a first?
Who's playing, you bastard? What about the nightmares?
And no, Mr. Reich, I won't tell you. I doubt if anyone but a first can tell you. And naturally, you would not dare to consult another after this conference.
For God's sake, man. Are you going to help me?
No, Mr. Reich, Tate smiled malevolently. That's my little weapon. It keeps us on a parity basis. Balance of power, you understand. Mutual dependence ensures mutual faith. Criminal, but peeper. That's me. Like all upper-grade espers, Lincoln Powell, Ph.D. 1, lived in a private house. It was not a question of conspicuous consumption, but rather a problem of privacy. Although thought transmission was too faint to penetrate masonry, the average plastic apartment unit was too flimsy to block this transmission. Life in any such multiple dwelling was life in an inferno of naked emotion for an esper. Powell, the police prefect, could afford a small limestone maisonette on Hudson Ramp, overlooking the North River. There were only four rooms, upstairs a bedroom and study, downstairs a living room and kitchen. There was no servant in the house. Like most upper-grade espers, Powell required large quantities of solitude. He preferred to do for himself. He was in the kitchen, checking over the refreshment dials in preparation for the party, whistling a plaintive, crooked tune. He was a slender man in his late 30s, tall, loose, slow-moving. His wide mouth seemed perpetually on the verge of laughter, but at the moment he wore an expression of sad disappointment. He was lecturing himself on the follies and stupidities of his worst vice. The essence of the esper is his responsiveness. His personality always takes colour from his surroundings. The trouble with Powell was an enlarged sense of humour, and his response was invariably exaggerated. He had attacks of what he called dishonest Abe moods. Someone would ask Lincoln Powell an innocent question, and dishonest Abe would answer. His fervent imagination would cook up the wildest tall story, and he'd deliver it with straight-faced sincerity. He could not suppress the liar in him. Only this afternoon, Police Commissioner Crabb had inquired about a routine blackmail case, and simply because he'd mispronounced a name, Powell had been inspired to fabricate a dramatic account involving a make-believe crime, a daring midnight raid, and the heroism of an imaginary Lieutenant Kopenick. Now the Commissioner wanted to award Lieutenant Kopenick a medal. "Dishonest Abe," Powell muttered bitterly. "You give me a stiff pain." The house bell chimed. Powell glanced at his watch in surprise. It was too early for company, and then directed "open" in C-sharp at the TP lock sensor. It responded to the thought pattern, as a tuning fork will vibrate to the right note, and the front door slid open. Instantly came a familiar sensory impact. Snow, mint, tulips, taffeta. "Mary Noyce, come to help the bachelor prepare for the party. Blessings. Hoped you needed me, Link. Every host needs a hostess. Mary, what am I going to do for canapes, SOS? Just invented a new recipe. I'll make it for you. Roast, chutney, etc. etc. That's telling, my love." She She came into the kitchen, a short girl physically, but tall and swaying in thought. A dark girl exteriorly, but frost-white in pattern. Almost a nun in white, despite the swarthy texture of externals. But the mind is the reality. You are what you think. I wish I could rethink, darling. Have my psyche reground. Change your I kiss you as you are self, Mary. If only. You never really do, ink, could. I'm so tired of tasting you, tasting mint every time we meet. Next time I'll add brandy and ice. Shake well. Voila, stinger, Mary. Do that. Also cross out the snow. Why strike out the snow? I love snow. But I love you. And I love you, Mary. Thanks, Link. But he said it. He always said it. He never thought it. She turned away quickly. The tears within her scalded him. Again, Mary? Not again. Always. Always. And the deeper levels of her mind cried, I love you, Lincoln. I love you. Image of my father, symbol of security, of warmth, of protecting passion. Do not reject me always, always, forever. Listen to me, Mary. Don't talk, please, Link, not in words. I couldn't bear it if words came between us. You're my friend, Mary, always. For every disappointment, for every elation, but not for love. No, dear heart, don't let it hurt you so, not for love. I have enough love. God pity me for both of us. One God pity us is not enough for both, Mary. You must marry an Esper before you're 40, Link. The guild insists on that. You know it.
I know it.
Then let friendship answer. Marry me, Link. Give me a year, that's all. One little year to love you. I'll let you go. I won't cling. I won't make you hate me. Darling, it's so little to ask. So little to give. The doorbell chimed. Powell looked at Mary helplessly.
Guests, he murmured, and directed open in C-sharp at the TP lock sensor.
At the same instant, she directed close, a fifth above. The harmonies meshed, and the door remained shut.
Answer me first, Lincoln.
I can't give the answer you want, Mary. The doorbell chimed again. He took her shoulders firmly, held her close, and looked deep into her eyes.
You're a second. Read me as deeply as you can. What's in my mind? What's in my heart? What's my answer?
He removed all blocks. The thundering, plunging depths of his mind cascaded over her in a warm, frightening torrent, terrifying, yet magnetic and desirable. But snow, mint, tulips, taffeta, she said wearily.
Go meet your guests, Mr. Powell. I'll make your canopies. It's all I'm good for.
He kissed her once, then turned towards the living room and opened the front door. Instantly, a fountain of brilliance sparkled into the house, followed by the guests. The Esper party began.
Frankly, Ellery, I don't think you'll be working for Monarch much longer.
Canopies? Oh, thanks, Mary. They're delicious.
Why, yes, Tate, I'm treating to Courtney. I expect him in town very shortly. We brought Gallen along to help him celebrate. He's just taken his guild exam. If you're interested, pal, we're ready to rule Monarch's espionage.
Canopies?
Unethical.
Hey, we're ready to run you for guild present. Canopies? Canopies? Why, yes, thank you, Mary. Canopies.
Atkins, Sherville, Tate, have a heart. Would you people look at the thought pattern we've been weaving?
The TP chatter stopped. The guests considered for a moment, then burst into laughter.
This reminds me of my days in the kindergarten. A little mercy for your host, please. I'll jump my tracks if we keep on weaving this mishmash. Let's have some order. I don't even ask for beauty.
Just name the pattern, Link.
What'll you have? Basket weave? Math skirts? Music?
architectural design? Anything, thought Lincoln, just so long as you don't make my brains itch. The doorbell chimed again, and a solar equity advocate, too, entered with his girl. She was a demure little thing, surprisingly attractive outwardly and new to the company. Her TP pattern was naive and not deeply responsive, obviously a third.
Greetings, abject apologies for the delay. Orange blossoms and wedding rings are the excuse. I proposed on the way over.
And I'm afraid I accepted, the girl said, smiling.
Don't talk, the lawyer shot at her. This isn't a third-class brawl. I told you not to use words.
I forgot, she blurted again, and then heated the room with her fright and shame.
Powell stepped forward and took the girl's trembling hand. Ignore him. He's a second-come-lately snob. I'm Lincoln Powell, your host. I Sherlock for the cops. If your fiancé beats you, I'll help him regret it. Come and meet your fellow freaks. He conducted her around the room. This is Gus Tate, a quack one. Next to him, Sam and Sally Atkins. Sam's another of the same. She's a babysitter, too. They're just in from Venus, here on a visit.
How do you do?
That fat man sitting on the floor is Wally Shervell, architect, too. The blonde sitting in his lap to the power of two is June, his wife. June's an editor, too. That's their son, Gallen, talking to Ellery West. Gally's a tech undergrad, three.
Young Gallen Shervell indignantly started to point out that he'd just been classed second and hadn't needed to use words in over a year. Powell cut him off. And below the girl's perceptive threshold explained the reason for his deliberate mistake.
Oh, said Gallen. Yep, brother and sister thirds, that's us. And am I glad you're here. These deep peepers are beginning to scare me.
Oh, I don't know. I was scared at first, but I'm not any more.
And this is your hostess, Mary Noyes.
Hello. Canopies? Thank you. They look delicious, Mrs. Powell.
Now, how about a game? Powell interposed quickly. A rebus, anyone?
Outside, huddled in the shadow of the limestone arch, Jerry Church pressed against the garden door of Powell's house, listening with all his soul. He was cold, silent, immobile, and starved. He was resentful, hating, contemptuous, and starved. He was an Esper too deleted and starved. The bend sinister of ostracism was the source of his hunger. Through the thin maple panel filtered the multiple TP pattern of the party. A weaving, ever-changing, exhilarating design. And Church, Esper too deleted, living on a sub-marginal diet of words for the past 10 years, was starved for his own people, for the Esper world he had lost. The reason I mentioned to Courtney is that I've just come across a case that might be similar. That was Augustus Tate, sucking up to Atkins.
Oh, really? Very interesting. I'd like to compare notes. Matter of fact, I made the trip to Terra because de Courtney's coming here. Too bad de Courtney won't, well, be available.
Atkins was obviously being discreet, and it smelt as though Tate was after something.
Maybe not, Church speculated, but there was some elegant block and counter-blocking going on, like duelists fencing with complicated electrical circuits.
Look here, Peeper, I think you've been pretty snotty to that poor girl.
Listen to him shoot off his mind, Church muttered. Powell, that holy louse who had me kicked out, preaching down his big nose at the lawyer.
Poor girl, you mean dumb girl, Powell. My God, how gauche can you get? She's only a third. Be fair. She gives me a pain. Do you think it's decent marrying a girl when you feel that way about her? Don't be a romantic ass, Powell. We've got to marry peepers.
I might as well settle for a pretty face. The rebus game was going on in the living room. The noise girl was busy building a camouflaged image with an old poem. The sea is calm tonight. The tide is full. The moon lies fair upon the straits. On the French coast, the vast and glimmering strand. Out in the tranquil bay. Come to the window, sweet is the night air. Only from the long line of spray of the cliffs, the gone is and gleams light.
What the devil was that? An eye in a glass, eh? Oh, not a glass. A stein. Eye in a stein. Einstein. Easy. What do you think of Powell for the big job, Ellery? That was Shervo with his phony smile and his big, fat, pontifical belly. For guild president? Yes. Damned efficient man. Romantic, but efficient. The perfect candidate. If only he'd get married. That's the romance in him. He's having trouble locating a girl. Don't all you deep peepers? Thank God I'm not a first. And then a smash of glass, crashing in the kitchen, and Preacher Powell again, lecturing that little snot, Gus Tate. Never mind the glass, Gus. I had to drop it to cover for you. You're radiating anxiety like a nova. The devil I am, Powell. The devil you're not. What's all this about Ben Reich? The little man was really on guard. You could feel his mental shell hardening. Ben Reich? What brought him up? You did, Gus. It's been moiling in your mind all evening. I couldn't help reading it. Not me, pal. You must be tuning another TP. Image of a horse laughing. Pal, I swear I'm not. Are you mixed up with Reich, Gus? No, but he could feel the blocks banging down into place. Take a hint from an old hand, Gus. Reich can get you into trouble. Be careful. Remember Jerry Church? Reich ruined him. Don't let it happen to you. Tate drifted back to the living room. Powell remained in the kitchen, calm and slow-moving, sweeping up broken glass. Church lay frozen against the back door, suppressing the seething hatred in his heart. The Sherville boy was showing off for the lawyer's girl, singing a love ballad and paralleling it with a visual parody. College stuff. The wives were arguing violently in sine curves. Atkins and West were interlacing cross-conversation in a fascinatingly intricate pattern of sensory images that made Church's starvation keener. Would you like a drink, Jerry? The garden door opened. Powell stood silhouetted in the light, a bubbling glass in his hand. The stars lit his face softly. The deep, hooded eyes were compassionate and understanding. Dazed, Church climbed to his feet and timidly took the proffered drink. Don't report this to the guild, Jerry. I'll catch hell for breaking the taboo. I'm always breaking rules. Poor Jerry. We've got to do something for you. 10 years is too long. Suddenly, Church hurled the drink in Powell's face, then turned and fled.
That's the end of this side.